it is important that such sports events take place in Africa, and every country has the right to attract the international media and to show whatever they have to show. That's why it's a tragic event that took place in Cabinda, but surely it was not an isolated incident, and we just need to see what will happen after that, what will be the response, and hoping that the international public will not drop all the attention that they give to this particular region once the sport event is over.
How is the 2006 peace agreement between Angola's MPLA government and FLEC, the Front for the Liberation of the Enclave of Cabinda, holding up?
Well, from the beginning, it was clear that it was an incomplete peace agreement, because actually only one faction of FLEC signed it, and the other faction refused to sign because they were not involved in the negotiations. Since then, the government has claimed that the war is over because it was the first formal peace agreement on paper. It was published in the National Gazette and very formalized. So they claim that the war is over and there is no more guerrilla activity. But in fact, there has been a wave of repression since this peace agreement against any critic of the peace agreement. And this includes arbitrary arrests against rebel suspects who were actually ordinary citizens, most of them, apparently, like Fernando Lelo, the Voice of America correspondent, who were accused of staging those attacks to make the public believe that the guerrilla still exists. So it's a very complicated situation since 2006. There have been sporadic attacks, and these attacks have intensified in recent times. The guerrilla has threatened that they would intensify their activities ahead of the Cup of Nations, because obviously they also seek public attention at a moment where all eyes are on Angola.
What kinds of signs did you have back in December of impending trouble during the January football tournament?
First, I had reports of several armed attacks, two of them in November. And one of them, while I was there, the state press omitted this incident. And, you know, we have a correspondent there who is an excellent journalist. And he came under a lot of pressure after having reported on one of those incidents, especially the one on November 18. So this led us believe that the government may do everything to silence the independent press before the Cup of Nations. And our main concern now is what will happen after everybody leaves.
Now, did Angolan officials hear the warnings of Human Rights Watch in Cabinda, and did they heed your warnings?
I don't think that the Angolan government needs our warnings. I'm sure they are very well informed. The question is, what does the Angolan government allow to be reported publicly?
Why do you think Angolan authorities chose to arrest and intimidate two journalists during preparations for the tournament?
They took a picture of the stadium, but there was no reason to arrest them. They didn't break any law, and they were quickly released. The other thing is that during the interrogations, the question was not why they took a picture of the stadium, but also the police questioned about work. They criticized spreading lies to the press, and this is the main concern. We don't know what the reasons were. Maybe it was a mistake. I actually didn't expect something like that to happen, because they knew that there was more attention, and I expected actually that nothing would happen to anybody, especially not international journalists, in the period before the Cup of Nations. But what appeared to me is the main target was actually the local journalist, and our main concerns are the local journalists. They are very few, and they have been under a lot of pressure. You know about the story of the former Voice of America correspondent, who was actually the colleague of the current one, Fernando Lelo. Once he left journalism, he was arrested and accused of national security crimes and sentenced to 12 years of prison. He was released after 2 years in prison. He was acquitted by the Military Supreme Court, but I spoke with him today, and he's very concerned also because he has received threats that he may be charged again for allegedly selling arms to the guerrilla. So actually, I've spoken with several people there, and they're all very concerned about how the government will react, how they will respond to this situation, and they fear that there may be a general crackdown and indiscriminate repression.
Is it clear whether the other FLEC faction is actively supporting Friday's attacks, and do you think that the faction itself might be able to put an end to the terrorism?
The Liberation Front of the Enclave, or the state of Cabinda, is a very old movement and very fragmented. And the Angolan government has been able to play all these factions against each other with some success. At this moment, it's not really clear who actually perpetrated the attack. There is a faction who doesn't seem to have acted at orders of the FLEC-FAC leadership in Paris. So it's not really clear what is happening within the guerrilla and who is on control of what.
Now, you did say, though, that one faction of the rebel group pledged to increase activities ahead of the football tournament. What do you think this portends for the South African hosting of the World Cup tournament in June of this coming year?
Well, I mean, the South African tournaments will take place in South Africa, very far from Cabinda. So I don't expect that the Cabindan guerrilla will be able to act also in South Africa. But I wouldn't make any prediction on that.
Nonetheless, this did have quite a bit of impact because of the international character of the sport. There are many players on the Togolese team, for instance, who play in Europe. And a lot of the European countries are thinking twice about African hosting of the World Cup tournament now. Both Angola and South Africa are very eager to show off the progress they've made in overcoming civil war, apartheid, and other indictments of history. Do you think that they can continue to attract international participants in spite of last week's incidents?
Well, we hope so, because it's very important that more people take notice of the reality in those countries. And there was a discussion if it should take place in Angola or not, but Human Rights Watch doesn't take a position on that.
Angolan authorities did warn the teams coming that they should travel by air, and the Togolese chose to use bus transportation. Do you think that the Angolan government can be held responsible when they did issue such a warning in advance?
I cannot give an opinion on this because I don't know who is actually in charge of transport for the football players. Partly it's the CAF, actually. And I mean, certainly it was a bad idea to travel by road, but I don't know who took this decision. What is clear that the Angolan government, they sent protection units actually from the Rapid Intervention Police, which are heavily armed, and they were actually escorting the buses. So they were not completely alone. That's why also the guerrilla claims that they actually targeted the Rapid Intervention Police or the security forces, but that's another thing.